You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week. I've been watching Unseemly on Discovery Plus. It's the story of the Canadian king of polyester, Peter Nygaard. Now, although he was never a household name, Nygaard built an international fashion empire worth hundreds of millions of dollars and quickly learned how to spend the vast fortune that he amassed. Nygaard led an extravagant playboy lifestyle, constantly surrounded by beautiful young women, and owned a set of lavish homes, including a massive 6-acre estate that he built in the Bahamas, designed to look like a Mayan temple. But hiding beneath the outlandish public persona, scores of women say, was a dangerous sexual predator who'd practiced and perfected the crime of sexual assault for decades. More than 80 women in the Bahamas, Canada, and the United States have joined a class action lawsuit against Nygaard and his companies of rape, sexual assault, and sex trafficking dating back to the 1970s. Their accusations have led to an investigation by the FBI and ultimately Nygaard's arrest this week in Canada for extradition to the United States. So Unseemly, the investigation of Peter Nygaard takes a deeper look into these accusations and explores his life from his humble beginnings to his career in the fashion industry and the public feud with a powerful neighbor that exposed the countless alleged sexual assault and trafficking allegations that were brought against him. It's 4 episodes and they're all on Discovery Plus. And again, it's called Unseemly. I've also been watching The Big Day on Netflix. This is produced by Condé Nast India. And it is visually stunning. It was released on Valentine's Day, and the series explores the lavish weddings of 6 Indian couples with an insight into their nation's multi-billion dollar wedding industry. I have never seen anything like it. So from Jaipur to New Delhi, we see teams of wedding planners put to the test designing extravagant sets worthy of a Bollywood movie while embracing the demands of the modern Indian bride. So traditions and cultures are explored throughout as we see each couple's journey to create a deeply personal reflection of themselves through the backdrop of their bespoke parties and ceremonies, employing thousands of people to make it happen. It reminds me of the beauty of the movie Monsoon Wedding. You have to watch it. And I feel like every time I see a picture of an Indian wedding, I'm reminded of that beautiful movie. I also think I have such a great appreciation for it because I only had 20 people at my wedding. I got married in Hawaii. I didn't have any bridesmaids. I think I've told you guys this before. John Mellencamp was at the hotel and I almost asked him to walk me down the aisle. I pretended in the hot tub that I had no idea who he was when I was talking to his then wife, Elaine, and his 2 sons. And then later when I interviewed Teddy Mellencamp, I told her that story and she said he absolutely would have walked you down the aisle. And now I'm kicking myself because it would have been the best story to tell. But yeah, I only had 20 people there. So to see the enormity of these weddings and in another pocket of the world. It's really interesting. And also, like, we've been stuck in our houses for a year. It's nice to see what's going on in other parts of the world. This episode I'm excited about because I've really enjoyed watching the season of The Real Housewives of Dallas. And the newest cast member is Tiffany Moon. She provides the Bravo franchise with both its first medical doctor and first-generation Asian-American star. And as a practicing physician who stayed on the front lines of her city's battle with COVID while raising a family. She was born outside of Beijing and immigrated to the United States when she was 6 years old. And she's an enormously funny character to be added to this really interesting franchise set in Dallas. She has said she wanted to represent the Asian American community. We constitute a large percentage of the American population at this point, and that's not reflected in the media. So it's great to see a working mom, a mom of young girls, someone who is not only just brilliant, but just so clever and quick-witted and has great quips. But it's also really eye-opening in terms of learning more about implicit racial bias in the Asian community. So I strongly encourage you guys all to start watching. And then I had a chance to talk to Ryan and Uncle Kevin from one of my new favorite shows, which is called Buried by the Bernards, which is on Netflix. It's set at the R. Bernard Funeral Services in Memphis, Tennessee. And it's less about the fact that they run a funeral home, but more about their family, because the family dynamics are absolutely hilarious. So there's the matriarch, Debbie, who co-founded the funeral home in 2017 with her put-upon son, Ryan, his daughters, Deja and Reagan, who help out in the office while always rolling their eyes at everybody who's older than them in the office, and Debbie's brother, Kevin, who is this really zany uncle who sounds like he smokes cigarettes in bed. They have built a profile with a handful of marketing stunts that are kind of pretty much brilliant. There's a drive-through viewing window, a publicity play that's unintentionally well-suited to the demands of socially distanced mourning. And then there was a viral commercial touting R. Bernard's low price is starring Kevin as a reanimated corpse, a mid-season subplot that features Debbie demanding, then directing to follow up what's become the business's calling card. They really are such a funny, funny family. And every episode just is the funniest things. Like, Kevin has to buy a new hearse and he's trying to like lowball the hearse dealer. He's got to take a makeup lesson to improve his cadaver handling skills. Reagan is choosing a college to attend. And then Debbie, their mother, whom they lovingly refer to as a dictator, and her foray into online dating. It's really super funny and the whole family can watch it. So I'm really excited about this episode. So here we go. Tiffany Moon, I have so enjoyed watching you this season. Does it just feel like it's been like a tornado hit and you just got spit out?
I don't think it spit me out yet. I'm still cycling.
So how long ago was this filmed, the show?
We filmed in the summertime in the thick of the Texas heat from about June to September.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, first I want to go back. You are the first-generation Asian-American cast member on A Real Housewives. I know that it took you some time to wrap your brain about joining the show, because I remember Deandra several years telling me, I've got this friend, Tiffany, who would be great on the show. So I know that you were mulling it. So first, let's go back. When you were 6 years old, you came to the United States.
Yeah, my parents left me in the care of my grandparents when I was 3 years old so that they could come to America to pursue higher education and hopefully, you know, set up a better life for us. So I didn't see them for 3 years. I was in China. They were in America trying to do all of the things, I'm sure, go to school and work at a Chinese restaurant at night to make ends meet. And I'm sure that having a three-year-old with them would not have helped that. So on my sixth birthday around there, I got to fly in an airplane for the first time in my entire life. And they put me on a flight from Beijing to JFK. And all I remember from the flight is that the flight attendant gave me unlimited snacks and let me drink Coca-Cola. So I was like, flying is the coolest thing ever. And then I met my parents when I was 6 years old and learned English then for the first time ever.
And have your parents ever talked to you about the tremendous emotional strength that must have taken them to leave you and to begin a life in another continent?
You know, I wish we had that conversation, but I can't honestly tell you that we have. My parents and I are close in a way that they know I would do anything for them. I signed them up for the COVID vaccine. You know, I checked the website every day, got them in line. Like, we do things for each other, but we don't really talk, and especially not about feelings.
And to think about your mom having to say goodbye to you and then not see you for all that time, I can't even imagine what that must have been like for her.
Yeah, I think about it from her perspective. And I remember when my children were three, and I don't really think there would have been any opportunity in the world that I would leave them behind halfway across the world. I don't think I would have had the courageousness that she had and the foresight to think, I must do this. Ultimately, if this is for her, I mean, she did it for me so that I could then be brought to America to have educational opportunities that honestly, if I had stayed in China, I probably would not have had. I probably would not be a doctor if I had stayed in China. I mean, I don't know, but I think my parents had the foresight to kind of look ahead and see that the best future they could give to me was if they established a life in America.
Maybe even cracking both of them open, they're afraid that initiating a conversation with that would just be like opening a floodgates.
Exactly. Our family's MO in terms of dealing with past feelings, transgressions, family troubles, which, you know, every family has their troubles, is that we like to sweep them under the rug. We don't really talk about, you know, the time that we had to move and, you know, the fights that my parents would have about money and things. Like, we don't talk about those things. We just sort of pretend like they never existed and go on with our lives now.
Well, you're not the only family to deal with that. So we definitely get that. So did you feel enormous pressure then to succeed and to become a doctor because you felt like you owed it to your parents?
Yes. I felt that it was my duty, obligation, responsibility to be a doctor and to be a good person and to give back to the community and to bear sons for them, which I still have failed on that part, to inessentially pay them back. I mean, I hate to use that word because it implies a feeling of indebtedness. But truth be told, I feel indebted to my parents for making that great sacrifice of themselves. I mean, they came here, you know, not knowing English either and probably having to deal with racism as well. And I feel like they did that for me, to give me the opportunity to have a better life. And now that I have this amazing life, I feel incredibly indebted to my parents and have tried to pay them back in every way possible, mostly through the acquisition of material goods. But I don't really know what else to say other than thank you. I appreciate your struggle. I appreciate your foresight. Thank you for giving me a good life. And here's a brand new car.
So you graduate early and you go to Cornell, which lots of people on the Northeast know is also called Cornell. Because it's so competitive. Did you feel like a fish out of water being significantly younger than everybody else?
I did not. I have an old soul. I've always had friends that are older than me, and I've always dated boys or men that were older than me. I tend not to ever have hung out with people in my own age group for whatever reason. So when I went to Cornell at the age of 17 and lived in the dorms and everything, I didn't really tell anyone that I was 17 because it didn't really come up and I didn't want it to be a topic of conversation. So the topic never really came up and it was never really an issue for me until it was time to go drinking.
Then
I was like, I can't really get into the bars. Luckily, and this is, I'm not condoning this behavior. Luckily, I had an Asian sorority sister.
That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it.
Who sort of looked like me.
Yes.
And she gave me her ID. So I basically pretended to be her when we got into bars. And it worked.
Now, were you like me where you had to memorize all the information
on
your fake ID? And then we would go through rounds where, okay, when is your birthday? Yes.
Oh, yeah. No. Like I memorized her address. She was from Syosset, New York. I knew her zip code. I knew her birthday. I knew that she was an Aries because I'm a Leo. Because sometimes the bouncer would be like, what star sign are you? And I was like, Aries, the sign of love. And he'd be like, okay, go in. I mean, it worked.
Meanwhile, those bouncers had no idea what the hell a Leo was anyway.
Yeah. So there I was up in the clubs of Ithaca, New York, drinking at age 17.
Amazing.
Why not?
Why not? What else are you going to do in Ithaca, New York? Okay. Where did you go to med school?
UT Southwestern here in Dallas.
So you get to Dallas. Where did you meet your husband? And people are going bonkers in the Dallas area because your husband is attached to the Moon family and the infamous store.
Yes. So I met my husband almost the last month of medical school after I had already signed a contract to move to California to start my anesthesiology residency. And I had just got out of a long-term relationship and was not really in a good space to start a new relationship. So when we met in a club, and it was a club, sometimes depending on who I'm telling this story to, I will say the word bar. Like if it's just a stranger and they're like, how did you and your husband meet? I'll be like, oh, at a bar. Truth be told, it was not a bar. It was a club. They had bottle service. They had like skimpy waitresses and like, you know, that it was like, like it was a club, which no longer exists. Cause you know, those kind of places like circulate for a year or two and then they go away. Yeah. So we met at a club and I think it's funny. I told him on our first date, I was like, look, I'm moving to California soon and I'm really not trying to get into a relationship right now. So I just wanted to be upfront and transparent with you. And he was like, girl, chill. Like I asked if you wanted to have dinner. And I was like, oh, okay. Dinner sounds nice. I like dinner. Like, so I think it was because I didn't try to play my usual games that I played with him and all those sorts of things. And I was taking it so casually that we actually built a relationship instead of my usual, you know, dating story, which never ended up well.
And did he have a similar work-life balance? Like he worked just as much as you did. So he understood the commitment that you had to your career.
Yes. He went to business school and law school and is the vice president and general counsel of the Sam Moon Group, which is most known in Dallas, I think, for having a chain of women's accessories and handbags store. It's like Claire's on crack. Seriously, it's full of tchotchkes, like, you know, earrings and neck, like the cowboy earrings I wore on the season on the episode we went to Austin. Those are from Sam Moon. They were like priced at $5.99. Of course, I didn't pay for them, but it's just so many tchotchkes. And women just love going there because they can just get a little costume jewelry and not pay a fortune for it. So that's how their family business actually got started. That is the shop that his mom and dad started in 1984. Wow. And then when Daniel joined after he went to business school and law school, he had the vision to say, you know, I don't think the future of our company is in retail. I think the future of our company is in real estate development. In developing these retail centers that our shopping centers are a part of, and also getting into the hotel space, because we saw a big surge in hospitality and people who wanted to experience things and travel rather than acquire more things. We said it was sort of saw that shift in you know, the millennials, if you will. And so Daniel is really the pioneer behind his family's business in terms of expanding their real estate portfolio.
Are his parents first generation Americans?
Yes. They came here from Seoul, South Korea, and landed in Memphis, Tennessee. So my husband was born in Memphis. He's like, you know, he's my Asian cowboy.
So do your parents and his parents, did they find a lot of commonality, or were there any significant cultural differences between Korea and China?
You know, his parents speak Korean and English somewhat, and my parents speak Chinese and English somewhat. So it's really cute when we all get together for dinner, because there's just a lot of like gesturing,
yeah.
and food. There's so much food. And they have such a good time. His parents and my parents are like best friends. They love each other. So they buy each other Christmas gifts. And when I, you know, talk to his mom, she'll always be like, how's your mom doing? And they have similar values, even though, you know, one family's from Korea and one family's from China. They both came to America for opportunity and busted their butts so that their families could have better lives. You know, so they actually have a lot in common, even though they're not able to maybe have an in-depth conversation about it, but they're like best friends.
I love your story because it really is the modern American story. And I love that we have this housewife that is working so hard, has built this great career. And I think it's important for us to see that version of an American woman. Have you felt an enormous response from other working women and probably other women that are stay-at-home moms that are identify with your story, not just about juggling a work family life, but also just the demands of being a mother to two young girls?
Yeah, I have gotten an outpouring of support from so many women and a few men. And their sentiment is basically, thank you for being authentic. Thank you for opening up your life and your story to us. Some people will say, I also was an immigrant and dealt with racism and being picked on and that sort of thing. So thank you for sharing that personal story with me. And I'll get messages from like teenage girls that say, you know, can you give me some advice? I really want to be a doctor when I grow up. I want to be just like you. You know, can you give me some tips? And I try to respond, but it's getting to the point where I simply don't have the time. You know, I want to do so many things every day. I really do. It's not for lack of wanting to do things, but every day I feel like I run out of time.
Well, I'm sure you've got like 3 full-time jobs, so yeah. That would make sense. I would imagine that you took, and I know that you took a lot of time and mulling through the decision of joining the show. So we hear you on the show often say, I'm maxed out. So how difficult was it for you to make the decision? And did it interfere with your work life at all? Did you have to pull back on hours? Were they accommodating to your filming schedule?
The production team was very accommodating to my doctor work schedule. So if I was like, I'm on call, I work till this time, they're like, we're not going to shoot that day, or we'll shoot your home scenes that day. You having dinner with your family, putting your girls to bed, doing your mommy and me nighttime routine. But when I was not in the hospital, I was basically shooting. And that took a lot of time away from my family, and it took a lot of time away from myself. I am an introvert. I recharge by reading books and organizing my closet and cuddling with my dogs. And it was just like months of working at the hospital and then filming. And you can ask my husband, I was a crazy person. I was not a sane, reasonable person by the end of filming because I was literally working two full-time jobs plus some. I mean, there were nights that I would film until 9 or 10 p.m. and then get up the next day at 5 and anesthetize people all day. And I made it a point to never be late to work, never call in sick. And I even volunteered for extra call shifts while we were filming, sort of as a, not F you, because that's not nice to my work, but to prove to them that I was no less a doctor and I was no less committed to taking care of patients and teaching medical students and residents and doing my research just because I had this side thing that I was working on. So I sort of went in extra, and that came at the expense of my personal sanity.
You know, you can tell in some scenes that you just look emotionally spent. How much has chatter about the racial significance of your role on the show impacted you? Because it's really important for some of the scenes to play out because it gives people perspective on what your life experience has been. In the beginning of the show, you open up to Brandy about being a young girl who comes to America and has to learn English. And now you're an adult in a southern town, which is known for its manners. And we see this scene play out with the chicken feet, which may seem small, but it actually is pretty significant in helping us understand the nuances of living in a southern town and also of implicit racial bias. So can you just walk me through what that's been like for you watching it play back and what you've heard from your own community in terms of you being on the show and representing Chinese American women?
It's been hard. I did not think that when I joined Housewives that I would be having these important conversations about things like race, which is such an important topic that I'm glad that people in our country are talking about. I think my conversation with Brandy went really well. I felt that she was receptive and that she was truly sorry for her actions. And then when the chicken feet thing came out, you know, it's funny that at the time you don't think it's a big deal. And then when it shows, it becomes more of a big deal, like later than it was back then. I 100% own the fact that I was being pushy with the ladies and especially with Cameron for trying it because I knew that it would make her uncomfortable. And, you know, that was a little not nice of me. I own that 100%, but I just thought it would be such a great moment if we could just get Camera Westcott on film eating a chicken foot. So I get that I rubbed her the wrong way, but it also hurt my feelings that before they even tried it, they seemed so repulsed, you know, where you're kind of gagging and putting your food on the floor. And I felt embarrassed almost because there were staff working around us, clearing our table and refreshing our plates and things like that. I just think that there's a way that you can politely decline something. And I'm not sure that that's the way I would have handled the situation, you know, in the way that she did. And then subsequent to that, I thought that that was done. I really did. I thought when we left the dim sum room, the chicken foot was done. And then it was brought up again at another event. And I kind of was like, wow, I guess we have to talk about it again and again and again. And I'm tired of talking about it. I just wish that she had handled the situation, I guess, a little bit more gracefully. I mean, she's the one that's always saying, you know, etiquette is so important and she's a Southern lady. And I've never been a self-proclaimed etiquette expert. I probably have 14 thank you notes that I need to write that haven't gone out. But I don't know. I think it's something that we can bring a bigger conversation about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when she was saying that I had offended all the people in my culture, and I was like, wait, what? Like, I'm confused. But sometimes with Cameron, I think the best thing to do is to sort of just drop the situation, because she can be a little bit, she can perseverate on topics. And I'm not one of those people. Like, after I talk about something and we come to a conclusion, I'm really done with it. Like, I don't want to hash it out again and again. But I am glad that it sort of opened this dialogue for us to have this important conversation, because look at our world right now. People are so divided. There's like old Asian people being pushed down and attacked on the streets for what? Like, being an old Asian man, I mean, that's ridiculous. This is 2021, people. Like, we have to have an open dialogue. We cannot lead with hatred in our hearts. And if anything that this situation has taught me, it's that we need to have a healthy dialogue about this.
So here we are months later, it's playing out on television. Are you grateful for the experience? Can you see yourself filming again? What do you feel like all these months later?
This is not the first time I've said this, but I feel like I'm on a roller coaster.
Yeah,
like,
I can understand.
It seems like fun. Deandra was like, come on this with me. It'll be fun. You know, we'll go on exotic trips and we'll get to go to these parties and it'll be fabulous. Of course, she said that all that before COVID hit. And I feel like I'm on a roller coaster, and sometimes I'm really enjoying it and just relaxing and feeling the wind whip through my hair. And then sometimes I'm like, where is the emergency stop on this thing? Cause I want off. Week to week, it's very emotionally taxing. And I don't think that I was prepared for that. And I will be the first person to say that I'm not a very emotional person. And throughout the show, it really like uncovered a lot of hidden emotions that I think I had suppressed for so long, you know, because I go to work and I deal with science and I dose anesthetic medications and I put people to sleep and I control their blood pressure and their heart rate and administer blood and wake them up and take them to the PACU. And, you know, like, I don't deal with a lot of feelings. Like, I'm not too good with feelings.
Well, buckle up, sister, because that's going to change.
I signed up for the wrong show.
Maybe, but you know, I think that, you know, a couple months from now when the show ends, I think you're going to find that it was enormously helpful in opening you up to the rest of the world. And because of that, you've opened up your own self and evolved from it. So I think in the end, it will all feel enormously important to have done the show. And I think that opening your life, although it probably is painful at times, you're going to get so much out of it.
I hope you're right. I told my executive producer that I think being on this show is going through therapy, which I have a therapist that I talk to on a regular basis, but like years of, of things with my family and childhood,
it's condensed
good. Into like 3 months. It's like shock therapy in 12 weeks. It's crazy.
Tell everybody where they can find you so they can see what's going on in the life of Tiffany Moon.
Yes, I would love that. I am on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Same name, Tiffany Moon MD, no punctuation, just Tiffany Moon MD. And my website is tiffanymoonmd.com. And I have occasional musings on there and fashion picks of the week. And importantly, I have a shop page.
You guys have kicked this out of the park, bar none. My favorite show of 2021. Like, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
I could not stop laughing. This is like if Tyler Perry and The Office had a baby. This is so, so good. So first tell everybody a little bit about your business. And I know there was a 2017 viral ad that got the attention of Steve Harvey. So tell everybody a little bit about your business.
Well, we started the business, Arbonard Funeral Services, here in Memphis, Tennessee, January of 2017. And we started out with our drive-through viewing and our affordable prices of $18.95 for a funeral service. So we came up with the idea of this commercial, which my mother came up with the idea of Kevin jumping out of this casket. She had to beg him for like a whole entire week. So he jumped out the casket. We got so many reviews from the local news media, and Steve Harvey's people contacted us, and they were actually bringing us on his show as sort of a joke. Like the segment was called, Is It Weird? Is it weird that these guys have made a funeral home and have a drive-through viewing? And, you know, Steve Harvey made a big joke about it and, you know, picking up shaking fries and a hamburger. And it just went viral and went all over, man. It just took off. All to my Uncle Kevin acting a fool.
Well, the great thing about the show is it's about your family. And you obviously have enormous love for each other. And I think that everybody kind of would dream of having a situation where you could work with your family, and everybody is endlessly entertaining. Tell everybody about each cast member of the show, because everyone's so great.
Well, you have my mother, the dictator. You have my Uncle Kevin. You know, he was a star, and he was a comedian before Netflix called. And you have my two beautiful daughters, and you know, They're more like their father. You know, we try to maintain some sort of level of professionalism around here. But with my mother and Kevin, oh, man, they're a handful. I don't know what I'm going to do with them.
So are Kevin and Debbie sister and brother?
Yes.
And are there more siblings?
Yes.
Where are they? And can we get them on the show, too?
We have, me and Debbie have two more other sisters, but we only have one now. And she's just really not, you know, would be, you know, the fit for this show. But we had an older sister that passed away, man, in 2005, man. She would have took this show off to the, man. This show would have been, oh, man. We sit and talk about it now, you know. We sit and talk about how we hate that she's not here with us because, man, she would have been just the right character for this show, man.
Yeah.
They would have needed a camera crew for her by herself.
By herself.
But their other sister, my Aunt Jan, she's more kind of like me, kind of laid back and kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Anne is your mom's friend, and she deserves her own show, too.
Wow. I forgot about Anne.
Yeah, she's a character, too. Yes, she is.
You get those two together in a room, oh, man.
Now, your daughters, who are just beautiful and are like, they're like the straight man in the show. And they give so much comic relief, too, because they're just kind of like, oh, my, I can't even believe I exist in this crazy business. And then we get to see Deja have her daughter on screen. The fact that you run this funeral business, I think the great thing is that we have this preconceived idea that your business would just be so draining and that it would kind of invade your own personal life, that it would be depressing. But in fact, you guys have the best senses of humor and seem to have the greatest outlook on life, despite the fact that you work around dead people. Tell me a little bit about what your job entails.
Well, my job as a funeral director, I'm half grief counselor as well, you know, talking with these families at their most vulnerable and most, you know, biggest time of need, losing a loved one. So, you know, our first thing is just treating families like they're our family. You know, I'm going to treat your grandmother and your grandfather like they're my grandmother and grandfather. You know, we're going to take care of them and just treat them like they're our own. And, you know, in this business, you it's a cycle of life, you know, but we just try to stay upbeat. We just try to comfort the families the best way we can. And, you know, being in this business, it's a constant reminder for all of us that one day it'll be our turn, you know?
Do you feel like you know everybody in town because of what you do?
I feel like everyone knows me in town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And then, Kevin, tell me what your job entails, because at different parts of the season, we see you picking up a dead body where I'm like, that's the only person going to pick up bodies is Kevin. And then we see you take a makeup class because you're in charge of doing the makeup on a dead body. Please explain to me.
Well, on that part of the makeup class, that was part of some of Debbie's stuff. I didn't really need a makeup class. I guess you would call herself slick sending her granddaughter Reagan to class, but she can learn how to put makeup on. But she called herself saying I needed some help with the makeup part, you know. So I pretty much do a little bit of everything around here. I basically been cremating a lot lately. Mm-hmm. Ryan been having me doing a lot of cremating, overseeing me with the cremation. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what I've been doing a lot of is cremating bodies lately.
How many employees are at Bernard Funeral Services?
We'd have to say, I would say probably 10 right now.
Okay.
Yeah, because see, really, basically, during the week, we are just like just the family. Man, we have Tavion Robinson, you know, he's here with us every day. But on the weekend, when we have numerous of service going on, then we bring in our other cast, you know, the other employee that we do have. And we have maybe 5 or 6 or maybe 7 of those.
And we don't really get to see any of your home life. Ryan, you just have 2 kids. Kevin, do you have kids as well?
Yes, I do. All of my kids are grown. I have a son. He's 43. I have 2 stepdaughters. They're 40 and 48. And one of them is Ryan age and one of them is in their 30s. So I have 3. Yes, I do. I have 2 stepdaughters and 1 son.
What do they think of you being on the show? Are they getting the biggest laugh?
Well, you know, it doesn't shock them because they say I'm funny at all times anyway. You know, I keep them laughing all the time. So, you know, it just really fits me. You know, this show really fits me.
I watch the show and I'm like, I just want to be part of their family. You guys seem like the most funny people in the whole world. I can't imagine you're probably going to get so many more resumes to try and work after this show comes on the air. I mean, are you going to be able to handle the onslaught of attention that's going to come with this show?
Well, that's funny, Kay, because my Uncle Kevin, he's already talking about getting his entourage together.
You know? I believe it. You know what? I believe it. I believe it.
He's got to have somebody go to the cleaners and pick his suits and stuff up.
So I also wondered, is Corey going to work for the family business too?
That's a great question. I don't know, but yeah. I don't know.
Well, you know, he's up here with us a lot. He's going to sooner or later, he's going to fit in and grab him. I guess he's going to grab him one of them suits and grab him a cask and come on down to work. Down the hallway, I guess.
Kate, we can get him to help Kevin.
Yeah.
I know. That's why I kept thinking, why doesn't Kevin call Corey to pick up the bodies?
Right. Yeah. Well, because it's hard to get. Yeah, we're right. Because it's hard to get Reagan to go with me.
And Kate, you'd be surprised, Kate. A lot of people are scared. They don't want to come near, you know.
You got to get more Corey on screen because he just seems. Is he as sweet as he seems?
Yes, he is. Quiet. Very quiet. Yes, yeah. He is.
How did she marry? How did she meet a quiet guy?
Well, I figured I wanted the same thing sometime. Okay?
As her father, I want to know how she meets. You know, yeah, I want to know that story also.
Now, Kevin, are you married or are you single?
Yes, I am, ma'am. I've been with my wife for 15 years, and we've been married for 14.
Will we see more of her if the show comes back?
Yes, ma'am. You will. I told her. Well, we're having tomorrow where the show come out. I was trying to get her to come to the funeral home with us to watch the watch party with us, but she hadn't decided whether she wanted to come or not. So my wife is pretty much a homebody type person. She stays at home and looks at TV a lot. She loves TV.
Oh, good.
Who I want to get on this show is Kevin and Debbie's mother, my grandmother.
Where is she?
Now, she's the only one that can put those two in place.
Is she alive? Is she around?
Yeah.
Okay, we need to get her on the show too.
She is scared to death. She is scared to death of the COVID. She's not trying to come out the house. So
okay.
Yeah. Well, she's scared to death. She's been in the house since last year.
Yeah, she's been in the house since last year.
Are you excited about opening your lives to the rest of the world, really? Because Netflix airs all over the world.
Well, Kate, we filmed all of this time last year.
Wow.
So the whole process of them cutting and editing and everything, it was slowed down during the summer periods during COVID. So we didn't know when the show was going to come out. We were just sitting around for like a year, basically.
Yeah.
And so 2 weeks ago, everything just hit. Boom, we're coming out February 12th. This. So everything has just rushed us, really.
I'm excited for you guys, and I hope continued success. Is there anything that you want everybody to know about you?
Well, first of all, be sure to tune in tomorrow on Netflix and watch Buried by the Bernards. And we just want everybody to know we're just an everyday family. You know, we fight, we argue, we go back and forth. But at the end of the day, we love and support each other. And we our families in the community, we want they're our first priority.
And is Debbie prepared to be a superstar?
Oh, my goodness. She was telling me, I'm nervous. I'm nervous. I'm not gonna be able to go to Costco and Walmart anywhere. I'm gonna have to make sure what I look like at all times. And people are gonna try to take selfies of me. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Thank you.
The amazing Kate Casey. I want to thank my fantastic guests, Tiffany and Ryan and Kevin, and remind you guys to check out their shows, Real Housewives of Dallas and Buried by the Bernards. Remind you to click subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to this show and subscribe to it and leave a 5-star review. Jump in the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey, to talk about these shows and other shows that you're watching. And you can also check out my list of what to watch each week. And you can find that on my Twitter, at Kate Casey, where I tweet about shows and all and during shows all week long. And also on my Instagram at Kate Casey, CA. You can find me on Clubhouse app at Kate Casey. And I have a Patreon for bonus episodes. You go to Patreon, patreon.com/hello, Kate Casey. And I'm really excited about next week because, guys, I have Jackie from Real Housewives of New Jersey. I know that you watched the episode this week, the season premiere, and I told you guys you're going to punch the sky. It's so darn good. Can you believe when she says, I win, I win, I win? I just thought this is like Sopranos on crack. It was so great. So I'm so excited to talk to her, and that will be my next episode. So be well, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.